It's 8:39. You're listening to Community Radio KGNU, Boulder, Denver and Fort Collins. We turn next to End of Life Matters, as we do every quarter here on KGNU as part of our series, Practically Dying. I'm Maeve Conran, and my co-host, as always in the series, is Kim Mooney. Kim Mooney, long-time advocate for end-of-life decision-making and other end-of-life issues. And as always, my co-host, it's good to have you with us.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Well, tell us a little bit about what we're going to talk about today. It's a slightly unusual topic.
It is. We're going to talk about practicing dying, which sounds kind of odd. And once again, it sounds a little formidable. But you know, dying is one of the only things that we don't practice, we don't think about, we don't have any information about. So oftentimes when people get there to the point where they're actually having to let go, they're fearful, they don't understand what's happening. And so when we talk about practicing, we're simply talking about getting some information, moving away from the fear a lot earlier in life.
How on earth do you practice dying?
Well, my guests and I have three different forms today that we use. There are lots of different ways. Some of it is really just being around dying people and understanding how much, not easier, but how much more normal it is than we think. I'm working on a workshop based on Stephen Levine's work. It's a year long. It's called One Year to Live. And every month we take a different aspect of letting go or forgiveness, gratitude. What does a dying body look like? You know, how to get ready practically, meditations on it. So it's stretched out over the course of a year, so people have a chance to assimilate each one of those pieces in the context of letting go.
As always in this series that we've been doing now for several years, Kim, the theme really is, let's talk about this before we get to a crisis point.
Absolutely.
Which is always the worst time to deal with anything. And so, as always, we're trying to encourage people to have those conversations, maybe over dinner this evening. You could say, I heard this wacky radio show today about practicing dying, but that could be a catalyst for an entire conversation. But let's introduce our two guests this morning. We have Rosemary Landorf, who has been teaching adults and children for over 30 years. You're a certified saging mentor. What exactly is that?
That's correct. A saging mentor is someone who's been trained. My training was through the Jewish Aleph program, and I've been trained. We studied for about 2 years all kinds of aspects of saging, which is a word Rabbi Zalman coined, and he coined the word saging and wrote a formidable book called From Aging to Saging that covers a lot of topics around aging.
When I think of sage, I think of wisdom and
Right.
That.
So we make it into a verb, becoming wise elders, becoming conscious elders.
Well, it's great to have you with us.
Thank you.
Our other guest is Susan Nemchek, who is a classical homeopath and founder of Willow Farm, which is a contemplative center dedicated to developing the relationship between living in an awakened life and dying with love and dignity. So what does your work entail, Susan?
Our work entails educating people and practicing meditation. And meditation itself is a practice in being present in body, mind, and spirit with living and dying. And so, meditation itself teaches us not to be attached to fixed ideas or thoughts or perceptions, and that's pretty key in living and dying. So we educate the community and caregivers, and our center has a wide variety of offerings.
Well, we're looking forward to getting some real practical advice, as the series is called Practically Dying. But Kim Mooney, you said there are some specific things that people can do to practice dying. Let's go through some of these.
Well, let me tell you something interesting. First, Bhutan is a country that is known for being one of the happiest countries in the world. And one of their cultural practices is that they think about dying 5 times a day. So I think some of the practical things, as we've started to say, as we've said a lot of the times, is rather than get hit with something big, to take little sound bites, to go home and talk about the radio show, and that's it. You know, to bring up a death you've seen on TV, to say something about what you want in your life. Because the second real reason to do this is that thinking and talking about death wakes you up. Simply the idea that you realize you have limited time, as with anything else, you have limited time. So those little moments, I think, are probably the best practical ways. And then taking some real practical steps, like getting your advanced care planning done. You know, not just your advanced directives, but having those brief conversations with your family about what kind of care you want, or, you know, how you feel, so that they can talk about it, put it away, but again, bring it up a little bit later. So you start to integrate it into your life slowly, as much as your muscles can handle.
Well, Rosemary and Susan, what are some of the things that when you're working with clients or working with people in your organization that you advise them to do? Maybe some practical advice that we can give out today.
One of the first things is just in spending time and understanding what your body tells you. Because when we're afraid or feel difficult feelings, we tend to close down around our hearts and our mind tends to run free and spiral out. So we do a lot of touching into and real practice in dealing with difficult feelings. So
that seems very relevant right now.
Yes, it is. And It's absolutely a practice, because if we pretend or gloss over things that are difficult and we don't want to feel, they just stack up.
And so what is the relationship then between being very self-aware or having these, you know, self-awareness practices when we are in either the whole of our health or just, you know, alive? And what's the relationship between that then and dying? And we've used the term, you know, dying with dignity and love.
Mm-hmm. Well, when we're able to be with what is, when we're able to not have as many opinions or think we have to have the outside world conform to our ideas, our fixed ideas of how we can feel safe, we have, as Kim was saying, more muscle to deal with what comes up. And certainly if we practice showing up wholeheartedly for whatever comes up, it prepares us beautifully for what comes up inevitably in our living and dying.
Kim Mooney, you talked that one of the things you've spoken this morning, that one of the things people can do to practice dying is to actually be around people who are dying, because we are so compartmentalized. And we have done many shows in this series on where people die and the end of life experience. And very often it's not, I'm not sure that an end-of-life experience can be positive, but we have talked that it can be. But certainly it can be traumatic. It can be in a hospitalized, mm-hmm. very highly medicalized environment. And that can very often separate loved ones and family members from being with that person then at the end of their life. And so how can people be around people who are dying?
Well, let's start by saying we're all dying. You know, and if we were aware of that, again, I think the most important piece is we would be really grateful for every moment. You know, if you really want the experience, go to hospice and volunteer. Not that that means you're going to be necessarily around the kind of dying you want. But, you know, the truth is, I think every dying experience has some positive things in it. Even the most traumatic ones will wake you up a little bit, you know. So I would say one thing is to recognize that it's there every day. Look at the different forms of dying. It's not all about a human dying. And the other thing that's really important is that we don't even know when dying starts. The line has gotten very fuzzy and vague. So for one person who gets a terminal diagnosis, they may feel like they're dying right away. For another person with a terminal diagnosis, they may not feel like they're dying until they're heavily compromised. So just knowing that, knowing how fuzzy the lines are, you know, and paying attention to all kinds of death, doing some reading, you know, having short conversations. It's so important in our lives that nature and the universe, whatever you want to call it, give us tons of opportunities if we're not shut down, because it's half of what we see when we look outside of ourselves.
That is Kim Mooney here on KGNU this morning. She's my co-host on this latest installment in our quarterly series of Practically Dying. Practically-dying.com is Kim's website, and she hosts a lot of community events and educational events around end-of-life issues, making end-of-life decisions and various different things like that. Today we're talking about the different ways to practice dying and what we mean by that. And our two guests in studio are Rosemary Landorf and Susan Nemchek. Now, Rosemary, we mentioned that you're a certified saging mentor. That's with the Aleph program. But you're also a certified journal to the self and soul collage instructor. What are those two things and how do they pertain to our conversation this morning?
Well, the journaling is a tool that many people can use for all kinds of ways to deal with feelings, and especially as you're thinking about death and dying. There's many, in the journaling classes I took, we learned 21 different ways of writing down your thoughts and feelings. You can have a dialogue with yourself about your fear of death. You could do the stepping stones in your life that led up to where you are today and how decisions affected your life. And you can predict, you know, or look forward to what you might be happening in the next part of your life. And soul collage is actually a beautiful way of collaging your inner archetypes. So you might collage grief, or you might collage actually dying. And so you make small images on cards, and then they can teach you things about your inner self. So both of those tools can lead to kind of deeper self-awareness.
And so then, as we talked with Susan Nemchek, what is the connection then between having that kind of self-awareness and then a more positive end-of-life experience, not just for you, but also people around you?
I just think the more you think about these things and connect, like I made a card that was my grief card, and the more I connected with my inner feelings of grief, the more I felt able to not be afraid of grief and to accept it and to embrace it as a part of life. So I think part of what Kim does and the work probably even Susan does is we normalize talking about death and dying. It's like, I'm not afraid of talking about it anymore. I've had those conversations, and I'm in a class with Kim right now. We're delving deep into grief. It's a huge emotion, and I think most of us push it away or shut it out, and learning about it and talking about it or journaling or making a card about it just helps us express deep grief.
Well, Kim Mooney, let's talk a little bit more about that, because when we talk about grief at the end of life, there's the person who is letting go, but often the grief is experienced by the loved ones who are surrounding them. And so when you're doing this type of grief workshop, are you seeing a connection between maybe grief or an experience that somebody has had with a loved one for an end of life, and how that informs their own attitude towards their own mm-hmm. mortality and death?
Yeah, it informs their own attitude toward both dying, letting go, and grief. And, you know, when you said some experiences can be really traumatic, I think overall a dying experience holds many of those things. It holds the trauma or the sadness. It also holds the transformational possibilities, because people who are dying and people who are grieving kind of burn out the useless material. You know, you get stripped down to what's really important. So again, grief is in our lives all the time. If we would quit putting these lumps together and assuming that these happen at one time, we would see that letting go and learning how to be with that is a huge part of growing in our life, taking birth. And as Susan said, I think one of the things that we are forced to do when we are grieving is to let go of our external authorities. We have to really get into our body, because we don't have a choice. And when you get into your body like that, it brings forth a lot of wisdom we were meant to have that we have just simply ignored. So grief is overall transformative, even though it would be really inappropriate and disrespectful to say that to somebody who's in that acute phase of falling apart.
It seems that these conversations are ones that happen when you're not at that end of life phase.
You hope. Yeah.
And so how do you have a conversation around dealing with grief when somebody actually has maybe had that terminal diagnosis?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think any part of talking about that dying process has grief involved. So rather than separate it out, you don't even have to name it, although the value in naming it is that it doesn't get mixed up with depression or called something else. But I think letting somebody talk about the experience of letting go is that breathing into grief and breathing out at the same way, at the same time. So it's all part of the soup.
Well, we'll be inviting listeners to call in later in the show this morning here on KGNU as we continue our quarterly series on end-of-life issues, Practically Dying. I'm Maeve Conran, and my co-host, as always, is Kim Mooney, end-of-life and death educator, can I say that? We mm-hmm. don't like to say the word death, but you embrace it because, I mean, that's
you know
what
you
talk to people about.
There's that little moment you say death.
Well, practically-dying.com is Kim's website, and we're talking about ways to practice dying as we spend our lives, it seems, trying to avoid dying. But the truth is, each of us is, you know, we're doing it every single day. And as Kim and our guests are saying, if we lean into it just a little bit, we might learn more about ourselves and actually help when we do come to our own end of life process. Mm-hmm. Well, we did say that we're going to be giving out, you know, practical advice. We've talked about journaling and the collaging that Rosemary teaches, and Susan was talking about that, developing a contemplative practice and really a level of self-awareness. But, you know, for people who don't necessarily do those things, that might be hard to do. What are some first steps that listeners could take if they want to maybe dip their toe into this process a little bit?
Well, I think the first one is saying the word death out loud several times.
Yeah, I even paused it before I said it. Well, and yeah. I've been doing these shows for several years with you.
I know. And some of that's just learned behavior. You know, once you get used to it, I've had people say, I really want you to come and do a program, but could you just change your name or cough when you say it?
Yeah, don't use the D word.
Yeah. So I think a little bit of that is just that kind of, you know, watching a TV show where someone dies and being willing to talk about it. Or really look at the deaths that have already happened in your family. That is oftentimes how we figure out what we want, is looking at what's happened and what we don't want. And then classes like we're all offering, where you're with other people, it's upstream. You know, there's a lot of work that can be done easily when it's not about you. So when it's still theoretical, like the multimedia production I do with slides, it's fascinating deaf traditions around the world. It's not about you. So people are really interested. It's that line when all of a sudden you start thinking about you that it gets really dicey.
And how do you cross that line from the abstract and talking about death as an abstract concept to your own experience?
If you're lucky, you get to do a lot of that theoretical discussion beforehand. If not, if all of a sudden the first time that you have to deal with death is your own, it's a lot harder, clearly, but you still have to sit down, take a deep breath, find the right kind of language. I think a lot of it comes from asking a person where they are rather than leading them. Allow them to unfold. And if they can't talk about it right away, or it's not uncommon for people to talk about it and then 3 days later not want to and kind of waffle back and forth, then follow their lead and hope.
What would be some conversation starters that we could put out as suggestions to listeners?
Well, let's say there's a recent diagnosis. You could say to somebody, tell me what your doctor told me. Tell me what you understand about that. You know, tell me how you're feeling about that. Let them take those first steps, and all they have to know is that you're not leaving, you're not pushing your own ideas, and that you're really interested in what's happening with them.
Well, it is 5 minutes to 9 o'clock this morning here at KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. We'll open up the phone lines a little bit later. If anybody would like to join the conversation, we'll be giving out that phone number. But I'd like to invite our guests to weigh in again. Susan Nemchek, I mean, what are some of the practical first steps for people who haven't necessarily done meditation practices or contemplative practices, who are interested in it but just don't even know where to begin? What are some of the ways that you get people involved?
Just inviting people to sit with us in the morning, inviting people to take that quiet time and be silent. A lot of our classes and our education focuses on how we experience loss. And we have all kinds of, you know, false beliefs about our losses and what they mean about our lives. And so it's becoming friends with and understanding more deeply the impacts of those losses and how we accept and tolerate the feelings that we're afraid of. And that if we're able to do that, our life becomes more whole and rich. And so inviting people into, yeah, let's just have a conversation about what that meant and all those little losses. If we are friendly with our mind around our little losses, we can warm up to the bigger ones mm-hmm. when they come.
Well, what about you, Rosemary Landorf? What are some first steps if people are coming and taking your courses in either being, you know, saging or doing the journaling to the self or the collaging? Mm-hmm. I mean, what are some of the first steps, particularly for people who aren't used to doing this type of self-reflective practices?
Well, actually, my best advice, I misspoke and said Reb Zalman's book was formidable. And what I actually meant was it's a wonderful book. And his book is really kind of a groundbreaking work about how to think about the second half of life. And he really talks about that we have a life instinct and then we have a death instinct. And so how I see his work is I look at the four worlds in the Jewish language. There's the spiritual, the mental, the emotional, and the practical, the physical. And so, like, in the physical world, you do what Kim mentioned, you do some of your end-of-life things. You just take care of those little things like your will. You make sure that's finished. I mean, some of my friends look at me in shock when I talk about these things. But just a little step like writing your end-of-life wishes, your medical care wishes. And then a wonderful thing in the emotional realm that we did in the saging work and that we teach in our classes is you actually sit down, relax, and visualize what it would be like to be dying. You visualize how you would like to enjoy your last moments on Earth.
And does somebody walk
yep.
you through that, yep. like a guided meditation?
Yep, it's a guided meditation, and it's really, really lovely. It was deeply moving for me when I did it the first time personally.
Yeah, what kind of personal experience do you have when you do something like that? I would imagine it could be
It was very deep jarring. For me. It was very deep for me. And what's true is that we don't often get to choose what our death will be like. And so this is a way that you can imagine what it would be like. And so for a lot of people, you might be laying on a beach chair in the ocean. You know, it's a beautiful scene. And then you get to see who you would invite to be with you. And for me, that was a really deeply emotional fact when I just pictured my family and who I wanted to be there with me. It was really lovely. We do things through the senses. What do you want to taste when you're dying? Like what would you like to have on your lips? What would you like to smell? What would you hold in your hand? And what would you have around you, like pictures of loved ones or pictures of your favorite trips? So by doing it kind of imaginally, you can kind of prepare, and then that would help guide your directives. Like, I do want to be in a lovely space when I pass away. I do want to be surrounded by my family. So these kind of exercises, which often are, some of them are found in Reb Zalman's book, and a lot of them are taught in our classes, they're just really interesting ways to dip into this thought of dying.
But Kimuni, how do those practices then translate into actually maybe influencing our end of life? As we always acknowledge, you know, it's out of our control, but if we do have the opportunity to say what we would like and what we wouldn't like, mm-hmm. how can, you know, what we've heard here from Susan and Rosemary, how can that type of self-reflection then actually translate into mm-hmm. either legal documents or directives?
Well, you know, what we know is that anything that you say influences you. Anything that you hear influences you in some way. And so just bringing that reality and the fullness of it into your life now. So looking back at past losses or imaging something is really, it's really powerful. One of the things that we're doing in our year workshop is asking people in the first session to decide, what kind of an illness do you think you'll have? How do you think you're going to die? And sometimes it comes from, you know, a dream. Sometimes it comes from a fear from family history. And then every month they track what that disease process would be like. So again, it's very practical. It gives them a chance to talk about it. It gives them a chance to feel in their body what it's like one step at a time. And the other thing I think that's really influential is that when you're talking with people and they're at their fear edge, or we're talking about what has happened before with them, ask them to think about how they got through it. What were their coping skills? So that it's not like going scary step, scary step, scary step. They're recognizing at each point along the way, yeah, that was scary. Oh, I have skills. That's how I got through it. So you're really walking the wholeness of their life with them. That's how it influences them. It's not just a scary future. It's fitting it into the context of who they've already been and how they've survived grief and death before.
Well, we're speaking with Kim Mooney of Practically Dying, which is the series that we're doing on a quarterly basis here on KGNU. Today, we're talking about practicing for death through a variety of different processes. Our guests are Rosemary Londorf, who has a lot of experience in this. She's a certified saging mentor. That's with the Aleph program, and that has its origins with Reb Zalman. And also joining us, we have Susan Nemchek, who's a classical homeopath and founder of Willow Farm, which is a contemplative center. And our guests are with us until 9:30 this morning. If you have a question or a comment or maybe an experience that you would like to share, you can call us at 303-442-4242. 303-442-4242. We've talked a lot and we've done several shows on end-of-life directives and the paperwork that you need to do. Just to remind listeners again, because this is very much connected with what we're talking about this morning, do you need to have an attorney? Can you start this process at home on your own, just with a blank piece of paper and some loved ones? How do you begin this process?
You don't have to have an attorney to work out what we call advanced directives, which are two basic forms. And part of the reason to really practice this is at the end of life, things shift. Medicine shifts, focus shifts. We talk about quality of life rather than quantity. And if you haven't thought about those ahead of time, it's a really hard shift in your mind. So at the end of life, if you're able to speak for yourself, they will listen to whatever your choices are, they being a medical system. But you have to know how to even choose what your choices are. So we theoretically decide what we think we would want. We project ahead based on whatever we're thinking now. That's our living will. And then most importantly, we choose someone or maybe a couple of people working as a team, but one official person to make decisions for us when we can't. And their job is to carry out what they see on paper, or there are ways you can create the documents so that they can carry out the intention, your quality of life, your values in any situation where you can't talk. Those are the single most important ones for anybody over 18. So you're banking on the fact that you can speak, which means that when you practice dying, you actually know how to relate in a situation like that. You don't panic. If someone says to you, don't you want me to help you? You don't go yes without thinking, that's not really what I want. And then you set it up that someone can represent you, actually advocate for you, because it's not just represent, it's advocate.
It would seem that the conversation we're having today is really that first step that needs to be taken, because I'm embarrassed to say, despite doing many, many of these shows, Kim, I am yet to even do these directives myself.
I know.
It is something myself, my husband keeps saying that we're going to do. And yet one of the barriers I know is that I'm not even sure where to begin. But I'm hearing, you know, you talking and Rosemary and Susan talking about, well, imagine where you might be and all of that. That definitely kind of opens a window to like, oh, actually, now I think I might have that first step. And very often it seems knowing what you don't want is also maybe the first place to begin.
Well, you actually have to understand what the environment's going to be like. That, you know, we all have like 2-line sentences about what we think it's going to be like. I'll be in bed. Hopefully there'll be a light behind the bed. My family will be there. But if you can understand how complex dying is in this country, then you know what kind of decisions, you know, what you might be looking for up against. And that, I think, is really important.
Also, it seems that you should probably educate yourself on some of the legalities, what you actually, the choices that you actually do have. And I think we have more choice than we might think in terms of where we might, you know, choose to be.
We have much more choice. And part of that, unfortunately, is because we have many, many things that can happen to us that we may or may want to have happen. So that education is as much about preventing over-treatment as it is about getting the right kind of treatment.
Well, Susan Nemchek, do you have any more insight on that in terms of how that type of contemplative practice can really inform practical decisions and actually outcomes?
Right. As you prepare to die, because you have more muscle of being with what's right in front of you and that awareness, you set up the story. You set up your life in a way that is of your making, that it doesn't surprise you that it's the great unknown, that when we'll die. So we're ready to be with what is if we prepare. And that whole piece of things happening to us, you know, there's a lot of wisdom, I think, and I think it was Pema Chodron said, it isn't really that we die, it's about what we haven't yet completed in our life or actualized. So, yeah, the more we can not shy away or deny that it's a reality of being alive.
It's interesting that you said that we often think it's something that happens to you. It's like we're almost passive, you know, participants in an event that we're at the center of it. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
That's kind of like an abstract thing, but I think we often think of like an illness or death as something that's inflicted upon us, and we have very little control about that. So you're nodding your head. Would you like to jump in there and add a little bit to that conversation, Rosemary?
Well, it just makes sense that the more we, you know, think about it and prepare, the more advocate we can advocate for ourselves with a calm, quiet voice rather than a loud, angry voice or a loud, painful voice if we're in deep grief. So I just looked this morning on there's a Colorado Advanced Directives Consortium site, and there's a wonderful comparison of all the advanced directives out there and how they work. And it's really helpful because I knew nothing about this when I started. And there's so many ways you can have a choice and put your voice into these documents.
Do you know the website?
Pardon?
Do you know what that website
is?
Well,
I just Googled Colorado Advanced Directives Consortium. Kim probably has it down.
I work with them. Yeah. ColoradoAdvancedDirectives.com.
Yeah. We'll put that on our website.
Well, the choices are broad. And another piece of what we're doing in our education process at the farm is, as a homeopath, a great love of mine is using natural modalities in the dying process and in the aging process. Because as the baby boomers age and as people who have had more of a practice embracing their own health rather than surrendering it to a medical model, that's another part of building that muscle, is that you're aware of your health and your wellness. And we really embrace teaching people and practicing using natural food and natural medicine as we age and move toward our dying process. So it's another choice, and it's a way we can move with more awareness rather than suppression of what's truly happening.
That's Susan Nemchek, one of our guests this morning on KGNU. She is the founder of Willow Farm, a contemplative centre. And also joining us, we have Rosemary Landorf, who is a certified Journal to the Self instructor and soul collage instructor and a saging mentor. And my co-host, as always, is Kim Mooney of Practically Dying, practically-dying.com. We have several callers, actually, who would like to join the conversation. And we'll go now to Julian in Lafayette. Welcome to KGNU. You're live on the air.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Maeve. Yes, my name's Julian, and I'm a practicing Buddhist. I have a teacher here in Boulder named Lopen Rinpoche that does classes for death and dying, and also the idea that, what do you call it, we never know when something could happen to us. We could be walking down the road, or we could be in a car accident. So the idea that we can foretell our death is kind of, what do you call it, we never know when that'll happen. And that brings me back to the idea of my friend Laura Creho, who just died at the age 52. She'd had a illness for a while, and she just passed away Monday, and that's pretty young, and so we never know when something's going to happen to us, and we have to be prepared for it. And then there's a book out there that's by Sogyal Rinpoche called The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying that is very much a practice of preparing oneself for death and afterwards. And I'll let you all get back to other people. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Julian. Thank you for that shout out. And thank you for acknowledging the passing of Laura Creho, who was a longtime member of the Boulder County community. And we're going to actually have a report on her life and legacy this afternoon on our afternoon headlines. But we have several other callers waiting to join the conversation. We'll go next to Alison in Boulder. You're live on the air here at KGNU.
Hello. Okay, well, this is going to make our community seem really small. It's interesting tying into Lopan, who 20 years ago when he was here, or like, no, 15, I literally said to him, I will marry you if need be to make sure you stay, before he started his school, because I just knew that it was going to be so precious what he was going to have going on. And my friend passed as well. And recently from cancer, and I got into that stuff with the Tibetan Book of the Dead and went through this process with her of appreciating that people want to sometimes die the way they lived and not necessarily like, okay, let me look into all these dimensions, you know, and let go of heaven and maybe there's no escape or reincarnation and, you know, all kinds of concepts. And it was really a beautiful experience, and I think my question connects. I love how you broke down those four dimensions of, like, the physical, logical, rational, emotional, mental, and spiritual. So I think my question is around awareness and storytelling, too, wanting to hear that. I attended the Death and Dying Conference at the Integral Center with the living room, Integral Living Room. It was just so beautiful hearing stories of people at the people's, you know, best death time. I am interested in being a death doula. I just think it's the most sacred, precious thing I could possibly do, to be trained to be at that time, at that, with people, and support them, and like a midwife in that way for the second half, not just the time of death too. So I've been Facebooking using the Exit Buddy hashtag. At any rate, okay, so my question connects to when my friend was dying. She at one point was saying, I can feel the cancer outside of my body. And so, it's like, it seems like people's consciousness or their awareness shifts as they get closer to death, and maybe parts of them join up or something. And yeah, so story time. I'm not sure what my question is, but there you go.
Well, thanks. Alison, thank you very much for calling in. Thank you very much for calling in. And that seems to be pertinent to what we were just speaking there with Susan, in terms of so many people feel that illness and death is something external. It's something that happens to you, that you almost experience it in that abstract way.
What I appreciated about what the caller said was, it sounds like she was present with her friend and it was about her friend, not about her. And the curiosity was really about how that the experience was changing and exploring. Her friend was exploring it. And I think that's really key. A lot of times it isn't, it's important to remember that the person who's passing, who's dying, is it's about them. It's all about them.
But one thing that really struck me about Alison's call was that she went to a conference or seminar and she heard positive death stories, and it seems we're so quick, and this reminds me a lot of a giving birth story as well, we're so quick to share the horror stories around either giving birth or dying. And so I think we put that fear out into the universe and into the general narrative. And maybe as a practical exercise in being around death, we need to talk about a positive death story. Kim or Susan, anybody want to weigh in on that? Rosemary?
Well, it just makes me think of one of the aspects is doing the philosophical homework around death too, which is a big aspect of the mental kind of part. What do you think about your spirit? What happens to your spirit when you die? Being present, as Susan said, and Alison was present with her friend, that's so important. And if you've done this homework and you've thought, well, what do I believe happens to my soul? Where do I go in the afterlife? Those kind of beliefs, we don't often think about or prepare those. So that's another piece of practicing is doing your philosophical homework.
And also being in the place of not knowing. We so like to know what the outcome of most things are. We like that kind of control, and death is the great unknown. And being in the unknown and just being curious and wondering and bearing witness to just not knowing.
The other thing that'll help us drill down, what Alison said about you die the way you lived, is when we're talking about practicing dying, it really helps to know what kind of choices you might have, like how do you relate to pain? How do you want your family to be involved? What is it that you call value of life? Do you want to be alive at all costs? Do you want to be alive only if you can, you know, relate certain ways? And when you look at those things, they actually help you figure out what you want today. That's that reflection back. So as they inform who you are today, that sets the trajectory for how you're going to die.
Well, we just have just under 15 minutes left this morning with our guests, Susan Nemchek of Willow Farm, a contemplative centre, and Rosemary Londorf, who's a saging mentor with the Aleph programme, as well as a certified Journal to the Self and Soul Collage instructor. And she's also co-author of The Flourishing Principle. And my co-host, as always, is Kim Mooney of practically-dying.com. We do have another caller. I'd like to welcome Karen, who's calling in from Boulder. Welcome, you're live on the air on KGNU.
Hi, thank you for talking about this. And my one question is, you work to get yourself okay with this process, or at least so we think we might be. How do you keep the people around you from really be grieving instead of maybe accepting or even celebrating this situation?
Great question. Any of our panelists like to weigh in on that?
I think that depending on where you are, if you carry a feeling of confidence or faith or ability to let go into a room or a conversation with you, it alleviates a little bit of that ignorant fear. But I'm not in favor of stopping people from grieving. I think that part of that celebration and part of that conversation is part of grieving. So that to bring the wholeness of it in and help people understand what you need in that moment, because again, that's reflecting on how they're going to die.
That impact on other people is a theme that we've had throughout a lot of our end of life shows, because so many of our end of life decisions are also made in the context of other people, whether it's to prolong treatment that we don't want because we're sad, we're worried about loved ones, or loved ones maybe trying to prolong a family member's life. So it seems like as we're doing these very personal contemplative exercises, we really need to bring in our entire circle.
And another reason to do that, there are four specific fears that they find over and over in dying people. And they're around fear of losing dignity and fear of pain. And one of the biggest ones is fear of being a burden to your family. But when those conversations unfold, and I remember the one particularly where an older man said, I don't want my family taking care of me. I want my, you know, family to be okay, and I want to save my money for them. And when he sat down and unpacked it with his family, his oldest daughter said, oh my God, you changed my diapers. You got me through high school. There is no greater honor I could have than taking care of you. And so the whole outcome was different because of the conversation.
Well, we just have just over 10 minutes left this morning as part of our quarterly series on end-of-life issues. And today we're talking about how to practice dying and the different ways to do that, whether it's our contemplative practices or how that will then translate into actual end-of-life directives. And if you would like to add your voice to the conversation this morning, we can probably fit in another call or two at 303-442-4242. Our guests this morning are Rosemary Landorf and Susan Nemchek. And my co-host, as always, is Kim Mooney of practically-dying.com. Now, you mentioned all these different courses that you do, and Rosemary, you're an instructor in many of these contemplative practices, as are you, Susan, at Willow Farm. But what are some of the courses that people could seek out that will really, you know, fit into what we're talking about this morning?
You know, I think if you get online, you're going to find more than you even need to.
What should you Google, though? Because we want people to find appropriate content.
I think you could Google death awareness courses, death awareness classes. You know, on Google, any combination will pull up anything. You know, there are death doula training programs, hospice volunteer training programs are actually pretty powerful.
Well, that is one of the things that we actually started the conversation on, is one way to practice dying is to actually be in communion and be around people who are dying. And it would seem that, you know, if you want to volunteer at a hospice, that might be one way to do that.
You know, something else you said, it's very, very important. So I wanted to thank everybody who's talking about stories, because that is the way that humans have always learned, is through stories. And so listening to others and telling your own. And when I've done grief groups, people came in thinking, I want to tell my story. And they left saying the most important thing was hearing other people talk. So I think that that's really significant, to just share what's going on. And when you do it in community, there's room for the wholeness, because there's room for the good stories and there's room for the stories that aren't so good. It doesn't have to be one or the other. And that's the same as having grief and dying and loss and joy and, you know, comfort and wonder all in the same room. They're all part of the same soup.
Well, we're going to go back to the phones, and I'd like to welcome June in Wheatridge. Thank you for calling in. You're live on the air on KGNU.
Thank you. Yes, I have had some experiences with people I love and know that have passed away. And at the time when those incidences came up, I was able to put myself in that situation and be with them at that time. And every time that those people, you know, were able to fall asleep peacefully, they always seem to drop the walls, the insecurities, the doubt, the fear. And it seemed like the moments that happened, they more comforted me and made me feel happy. And then when the time came, I felt that peace, and I was able to imagine them kind of getting up and running down the hall and going back to the business that they were about. But I just was amazed how my father dropped his alcoholism and at the last moment his attitudes and anger to where he just simply became himself again, and I was able to embrace him. And I thank you for your time.
June, thank you very much for sharing your particular story. We actually have several people waiting to get in on the conversation. We'll go next to Jeannie in Denver. Welcome. You're live on the air.
Thank you so much. I just have a quick question. Listening to conversation has made me think about my most valuable, or one of my most valuable family members, which is my dog, actually. And she's 14 and she's small, so she could live to be 20 potentially, but I find myself avoiding thinking about her death. And I'm wondering if you have any advice for people like me who really can't imagine life without this dog.
But Jeannie, thank you for bringing that up. And we have talked about this on other shows, that very often the loss of a pet is so impactful on people's lives. I mean, anyone who has a pet, you know, knows that they are a loved, beloved member of their family. Does anybody have advice for Jeannie as she deals with this?
I do, because my dog dying was one of the hardest deaths I've ever been through. And one of the things I think, if you can't move forward into thinking about death, in my mind, the ideal death is not one that people don't grieve over. It's one in which what you can do is drop deeply into your grief because you don't have any regrets. So for me, living with something and loving it as much as I can and doing it in such a way that I don't have regrets about the relationship when I die, when they die, I think is a really significant way to do it. So I would say, I know you probably do this if you're a dog person, love that dog as much as you can every single day. Pay attention to it, appreciate it, so that when it happens, even if you haven't attempted to, you know, confront it directly, you'll have a very full, rich relationship. And that means as many treats as they want.
So do you think kind of you have to keep it in your mind that it will happen someday? But also living in the moment with them every day to appreciate them fully, is what you're saying?
From where you are, I think living in the moment, and then every so often, glance off of the thought. Just think a little bit about it, you know, and it doesn't have to be intense, but it can be, oh my gosh, this is going to be poignant, or what will I do? And then take a deep breath and rise out of it.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Possibly what could be helpful is just also appreciating the purity of the relationship. You know, those relationships with animals have no conditions, and you're having an experience that is deepening you and growing your heart every day by how clean and pure and unconditional it is. And you did that, and you know mm-hmm. how to love like that, and good for you.
Mm-hmm. But Jeannie, thank you for... Jeannie, thank you very much for calling in this morning. I'm sure your call will resonate with many, many listeners. We just have a few minutes left. I'd like to squeeze in another caller. Judy is calling in from Louisville. Welcome to KGNU. You're live on the air.
Thank you. My question is to Susan. Is it possible for you to say where your farm is, and is it open to the public to come?
Yes, it is. We're at in Hygiene, and our website is willowfarmcolorado.org, and we're a nonprofit. We're an educational nonprofit, and our calendar of events is on our website. Some upcoming things we have going on Saturday, we have a full-day meditation with Boulder Zen Group. We have Kim Mooney actually is coming in March to talk about grief. We have various sitting and educational events. Another thing I'm really excited about is in April, we have Being with Self, Being with Other, and Being with Dying with Lauren Olds. We have Monday through Friday sitting meditation. Come. We got chickens and goats and alpacas and it's a real refuge and a place of sanctuary. So
and the website
what time do you do the sitting meditation?
We sit Monday through Friday from 8 to 9, and the website you can is willowfarmcolorado.org, and our Facebook page is Willow Farm Contemplative Center.
It is one of the most beautiful places I have ever participated in anything in. It's just perfect for this work.
Well, thanks for your call. And we'll put all the information and contact info for both of our guests at kgnu.org. We just have a couple of minutes left. And as always, we often get a very strong reaction from our listeners. But final thoughts from everyone this morning. Susan Nemchek with Willow Farm. Final thoughts as we close out the show.
This work... is such an honor to do, because it takes us deeper and changes our lives every day, and it's something that we none of us know about. So it's a practice of being in the great unknown and being human without all the, because we're all going to be in it together eventually, and have our own experience.
Well, Susan Nemchek is the founder of Willow Farm, which is in Hygiene. It's a contemplative center, and we'll put information at kgnu.org. Rosemary Landorf, final thoughts.
the common thread that seems to me to emerge today is that we all need to be mindful, you know, all the time, thinking about the end of life, thinking about enjoying life, thinking even about our grief or our pets. The more that we think about this and are mindful in the moment is what I'm getting from all of this, just being present in our lives.
And Rosemary, where can people find out more about the work that you do as a saging mentor and also as an instructor of Soul Collage and a Journal to the Self?
They can look at centeringconnections.com.
Centeringconnections.com. Yeah. We'll put that at kgnu.org. Thank you. As always, my co-host has been Kim Mooney. As we've heard, you're doing an upcoming workshop at Willow Farm, and I know you do a lot more community events, mm-hmm. and people can find out more at practically-dying.com. Any final mm-hmm. thoughts?
Yeah, and I'll say the weird thing. I think that when you actually spend the time to integrate your death now into your life, it's not only fascinating, but there is a very enlivened urgency about it that makes a lot of it kind of fun. Have to say fun.
We normally don't get that. And apart from the upcoming workshop at Willow Farm, do you have any other community events mm-hmm. that you'd like to mention?
The one that we're starting on March 23rd is that year-long One Year to Live class that's got the variety of people. We still have some spaces open. It's usually a great way to do not only the individual work, but the community work. And it is going to be really powerful. So I encourage people who are thinking that they want to take some steps, but they also have a little bit of nerve, that this is going to be a really good place for them.
And people can find out more at practically-dying.com. Yes. Well, thank you all very much for joining us this morning. It's our quarterly series that we're very pleased to be able to host here on KGNU. And we're going to be having some very interesting conversations, I know, in the year ahead mm-hmm. with Kim Mooney. In the meantime, thank you to Rosemary Landorf and Susan Nemchek. I've been your host this morning, Maeve Conran. Stay tuned for the Morning Sound Alternative.